Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy, delighted to welcome you to today's edition of All Sides Weekend. This is the program where we discuss the arts and culture in Central Ohio, including what's hot, what's not, what's to do. And I have one guest today because when I have this guest, who needs anybody else? I am with Fred Anderle, WOSU's beloved Fred Anderle, who is now the poet in residence for The Ohio State University, among many other things that he's going to tell us about. We might be getting Steve Geyer from Shadowbox, who was scheduled to join us. I expect he's en route. If you're listening, hurry up. And hopefully Janet Chen from ProMusica will join us on the phone for a few moments. But let me welcome Fred Anderle.
Christopher, great to be here.
Any idea how intimidating it is for me to sit on the radio opposite you?
Listen, as a guest, I get nervous. As a host, I was fine.
Yeah. First of all, tell us about being, it says poet in residence for Ohio State University?
No, actually, that's wrong. I don't know if Ohio State, I'd love to be the poet in residence.
You are now.
I am now, as of this morning. Well, I'm going to be reading in a series called The Hospital Poets over at the Ross Heart Hospital. This is way in the distance here, Monday, January 28th. It's a series at the Heart Hospital and other hospitals, the Cancer Hospital, the James as well. And we read all kinds of wonderful poetry, not just mine. I mean, I am a poet and I do write, but poetry that will inspire, and not in a, you know, triacly sense, but in a lovely sense. I'm thinking of a poem here by Naomi Shihab Nye called The Art of Disappearing, which I'd like to read at some point, if you don't mind my reading a poem. But that is one of the things I'm doing.
Hospital poets?
Hospital poets.
There was a woman named Anna Soter, who's a professor emeritus at Ohio State, who was in touch with me about that.
Yep.
Tell me more about the program itself.
Well, Anna is in
charge. What's the purpose? What do you do?
Well, you know, it's January 28th, Monday, 12 noon. Everybody's welcome at the first floor auditorium at the Ross Heart Hospital. The idea is that we as poets come in and we talk to heart patients and staff, and there is an OSU College of Medicine student writers group. And everybody's welcome, by the way. You don't have to be there. You could be a patient over at Riverside. You can come. It doesn't matter. The idea is to listen to poetry that we think, I think, Christopher, that poetry is moving in a sentence or a line, you know, in a stanza. In other words, I love theater and I love movies, but it takes a while to build to something that's moving, and poetry can move me in just one single line. We want to move people who come. We want to stimulate them to write their own poetry, and we talk a lot with them about how their writing is going, in addition to reading some poems by some of the top people, some of the most wonderful poets that you can possibly imagine.
Are you focused on people who have been ill, or does it matter, or are you really geared to people who are, in other words, is there a healing component to what you're trying to do?
We're not focused entirely upon people who are ill. The staff comes, other people unrelated come, but poetry, I think, can be healing. If opening the heart, metaphorically, is healing, then I think poetry can be healing. And I think some of the poems I'm going to read are just going to do that within an instant. Want to hear one?
Yes, please.
Okay. This is a poem by Derek Walcott. He won the 1992 Nobel Prize in Literature. He's from St. Lucia in the West Indies. This is a poem I just love. It's one of my favorite poems, and it's called Love After Love. The time will come when, with elation, you'll greet yourself arriving at your own door in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome and say, sit here, eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes, peel your own image from the mirror. Sit, feast on your life. I just love that poem.
Feast on your life.
Feast on your life.
Yeah, Derek Walcott. Mm-hmm. That is part of your repertoire, I guess, of what you're offering
to the
public
.
In hospital. You also read around, you read in many other venues.
Sure.
Yes,
I'll be reading Monday. This is again in the future, Monday, January 14th, at the Rumba Cafe on Summit Avenue for the poetry series that Steve Abbott runs there. And it's fun to read. And, you know, I think poetry's gotten such a bad rap in our culture. You know, people think it's very intellectual and hard to understand, and sometimes that's true.
It doesn't rhyme. Why doesn't it rhyme? I mean, you know, you get stuff like that as well.
I once had somebody ask me, they said they were very interested in my poetry and wanted to see one, and I gave them a poem, and they said, it's not a poem. I said, well, why not? They said, because it doesn't rhyme. But I think, can I contrast Iran and some other cultures?
Sure,
around?
Yes.
There's a travel book out in which the author travels in Afghanistan and Iran. And he goes to Iran, and he goes to a butcher shop in Iran, just as part of his daily activity. There's a long line of people waiting to pick up a fresh cut of meat at the butcher shop. And the butcher suddenly decides, this is in Tehran, Iran, that he's going to recite an ancient Persian poem. He's just going to stop everything and recite the poem, which he does. And the author says, you know, nobody's upset that they're going to be delayed getting out of there. They're going to be delayed getting their order. They all stop and they listen and they love what they hear. Rock groups in Iran, they take ancient Persian poetry and they put it to new music and they have big hits. Generally in the Arab world, poetry is a big deal. In Abu Dhabi, you know, one of the Gulf states?
Sure.
There's a show, you know, American Idol. We know American Idol, right? There is a show, the equivalent of that in Abu Dhabi. And they compete for essentially $1 million American, if you put it into American money. All right. But they don't sing songs. They recite poetry. They sit in it looks like a big crystal throne with a microphone in front of them and a crystal music stand, and they recite their poems. And that's how important it is. So poetry is different in different cultures.
But I'm convinced that if you walked into a grocery store or a butcher shop or some poet did that and began reciting poetry, people would stop. Now, they'd look at you like you're nuts, but I think after a minute they would cue in and really start applauding it.
Yeah,
I mean,
I
wish like a mini flash mob of poetry going into a public place. I think that would be a great thing, and I'd like to throw a challenge out there to all of you poets to give us some of your text.
Sure, absolutely. I have to absolutely agree with you. Part of it is how you present it, you know?
Okay, yeah. But, you know, I think one-on-one, I think if, you know, literally standing in line for the cash register is about as basic as you can get, because we all have to do that. And if you begin reciting then, I think it's, you know.
I think you're right. I think it's partly where and when and in what context. Absolutely. Yeah, poetry could be. Well, you know, Billy Collins draws, many of you may know his name, will draw 1,000 people to the Bexley High School last year. But he's one of the few. But his poetry is understandable. You know, you can get it. It's quote, accessible. You know, you can really relate to it immediately on an emotional level. I think that poem by Derek Walcott is like that.
Well, it stays with you. I mean, it kind of haunts you in a good way a little bit. And those last two lines are still kind of resonating in my head here. But I also think that people think that the rhythmical basis of poetry and the how it's laid out, the sound of it can be very healing on all kinds of levels.
Yeah.
Almost a mathematical level. It's similar to music and music therapy.
Very much so. I think writing your own poetry, I think if anybody has ever had the urge to write poetry, it's not important whether anybody else likes it or whether it ever gets published. If you have the urge to write poetry, sit down, you know, pick up a pen or all you need is free. You don't need a computer, just a piece of paper and a pencil. That's all you need. And sit down and write.
And your own imagination.
And your own imagination.
Which is unique in the world. Your own imagination is only yours, you know, to give. We have a call from Jerry on the line who wants to talk about Robert Frost.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Jerry.
Welcome back, Fred Anderle and Mr. Purdy. Thank you for taking the call. Yeah, one of my favorite poems, a very short poem by Robert Frost, Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening.
Oh, yeah.
And two others, Longfellow's Hiawatha, which is taken from an old Finnish folk tale called the Kalevala. And I don't think a lot of people know that. And also Robert W. Service, who went to the Yukon, never mind for gold, but worked as a bank clerk, but wrote The Cremation of Sam McGee.
Yeah, I know that poem, yeah.
Yeah, and what was the other one? The Shooting of Dan McGrew. Great poetry. If you got that one, I didn't have time to get my book out, Mr. Purdy, but if you've got Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening.
And Miles to Go Before I Sleep, right?
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd appreciate it. And Again, always good to hear your voice, Fred, and glad to see you're in top form.
Thank you, Jerry.
He is indeed. Thank you, Jerry, for the call.
Have a great weekend. You bet.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Jerry. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend, and when you have a guest like Fred Anderle, you don't need anybody else, and Fred Anderle is here. Fred, how long were you in this seat with Open Line?
A little more than 20 years.
20 years. Yeah. And retired, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Almost 4 years ago. May of 2009,
My
right?
My goodness.
Yeah.
So the week or so after you... when you started your new life in 2009 out of here, what was going on?
You know, people don't tell you, but so-called retirement, I hate that word because it sounds like you're retiring from life, you know, but it's a real transition. You know, you're suddenly in, from one context, you know you're ready, but you move to another context. You wake up in the morning, nobody's calling you, nobody's saying you come do this, you don't have any schedule, and it's up to you to make your own schedule in your own life. One thing I knew immediately was that I wanted to write every day. I knew I was going to write poetry every day. And beyond that, I didn't know a thing.
I want to ask you about that. When people do that, when they set time aside for a certain task that maybe they don't feel like doing every day, do you time yourself? Do you say, I'm going to do this for an hour, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to, you know, do you make it very structured for yourself?
Yeah, I'll tell you what I do. I say to myself, Fred, even if you don't feel like writing poetry today, you're going to do it. You're going to get to the desk in your little home office, and you're going to sit down at the, I use the computer, and you're going to do it. And some days when I just drag myself up there, right, and I have a rule in the household, nobody else in the household can, if the door is closed, this means unless there's a fire or a flood or somebody's injured, you don't open that door, you don't call my name. You got to have that. You got to have that privacy. And I sit down and write. And sometimes, Christopher, on the days that I'm forcing myself to sit down in the seat, you know, on those days, some days you willingly sit down in the seat, but some days you force yourself. Sometimes the best stuff, the stuff I really want to work with, comes out on those days.
Let's talk about writers. Let's talk to our writers or have them talk to us. 292-8513 is the number to call. Let's call in if you're a writer, a closet writer, or somebody always wanted to write. Let's talk about your process and what you'd like to write about and how you do it. 292-8513. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org or find us on Facebook. And my guest is Fred Anderle. We may be joined by Steve Geyer from Shadowbox on the phone, he's apparently been called into a board meeting, which I hope isn't ominous, but we'll look forward to that. But if not, we have Fred Anderle for the hour. Again, 292-8513. When we come back, Fred will talk to us about I think you have a new book.
Yes, indeed.
Poetry Out. We'll talk about that and other things as well. We'll take a break right now, coming right back.
President Obama got a little cocky after winning re-election. He came out on stage, took a long drag in a cigarette, flicked the ash on Biden, and said, "You want me to stick around? Let me check my calendar." I'm Peter Sagal. It was a little much when he was texting the whole time. Join us for a post-election Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
And Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me begins tomorrow morning at 11 here on 89.7 NPR News. And stay right here at 1 o'clock this afternoon. President Obama will make his first comments to the nation after winning re-election. He will deliver a statement in the East Room of the White House. 89.7 NPR News will have live coverage. That's today at 1, right here on 89.7 NPR News. Join us. Sunshine for today, reaching a high near 60. Partly cloudy for tonight, a low of 44 degrees. Sunny and a high near 70 on Saturday. More sunshine and a high back up to 70 on Sunday. Support for 89.7 comes from Dental Reflections Dublin, a multi-specialty dental practice for the whole family. Pediatric specialist Dr. Hackman and general dentist Dr. Asani give details about their range of services online at dentalreflections-dublin.com or by phone at 799-5576. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you, Amy Jurevich. I'm Christopher Purdy here with Fred Anderle. We are talking about writing poetry, what Fred is doing now. He was for many years the host in this segment, and he remains one of WOSU family's most beloved members. He's working in several different venues right now, and you had a poem that Bill Moyers carries with him.
Yeah, this is interesting. Several years ago, Bill Moyers had a heart attack, a serious one, and he loves poetry, and ever since he had the heart attack, he carries this poem around in his wallet to remind him that life is brief, and to remind him that life is precious, and to suggest what we might do with our time. So I'd like to read it. It's by Naomi Shihab Nye. She is a Palestinian-American poet. She lives in Texas. And it's called, I read this to an audience of people in their 70s, and when I read it, they all laughed, and they said, read it again, read it again. So I'd like to read it for you. It's The Art of Disappearing, The Art of Disappearing by Naomi Shihab Nye. When they say, don't I know you, say, no. When they invite you to a party, remember what parties are like before answering. Somebody telling you in a loud voice they once wrote a poem. Greasy sausage balls on a paper plate. Then reply. If they say, we should get together, say, why? It's not that you don't love them anymore. You're trying to remember something too important to forget. Trees, the monastery bell at twilight. Tell them you have a new project. It will never be finished. When somebody recognizes you in a grocery store, nod briefly and become a cabbage. When someone you haven't seen in 10 years appears at the door, don't start singing him all your new songs. You will never catch up. Walk around feeling like a leaf. Know you could tumble any second. Then decide what to do with your time.
My God, that sort of says it all. It's really a lesson in how to live.
Yes, it really is.
And freeing one to say no to things that are really irrelevant or not important.
Because we don't realize at any moment, as the poem says, walk around feeling like a leaf. Know you could tumble any second. Then decide what to do with your time.
Thank you for that. That's a gift. We have Michelle on the phone. We have a lot of writers calling us in.
Yeah.
Michelle is here from Delaware. She writes professionally, but, you know, Michelle, maybe too much of a good thing can be too much of a good thing.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Go ahead.
Good.
Good. Hey, okay, so I'm a professional reporter, so I sit, when I'm not running around collecting stories, I'm sitting in front of a computer all day. And I go home and I have these ideas running around in my head for a song or a story. But, you know, I've been sitting in front of the computer all day and I can't. You know, it's like I'm tired of writing, and it's almost like the professional need to write kind of kills the creative drive. So I didn't know if you guys had any suggestions.
Wow. Well, I would, one thing I'd suggest, maybe get away from the computer, get a pen and a notebook, go in some wonderful outdoor place. The weather tomorrow is going to be 70, I guess. Take yourself elsewhere. Get in another frame of mind.
Mm-hmm.
Try to write from the heart. Give yourself different circumstances. That might help. But also make sure you do it. Just go do it. And even if nothing comes out and you're having a session where gobbledygook comes out, that's okay. Keep on writing, and that might happen for a few sessions. Sometimes our writing pipes get clogged, either because we've been writing stuff that's, routine, and it can take several days for the rust to flow out of the pipes and the water to flow clear. So I would say keep at it. Make it fun and interesting as much as you can, but insist to yourself that you do it.
Okay.
Hemingway said, which I thought was interesting, that what worked best for him was if he was writing something and he was really into it, really on fire, he would stop and resume tomorrow because he wanted to. He thought he could recapture that energy, which I think is kind of interesting. When most of us would just keep going and not dare to stop, but he always did that. We have Robin, and then we're going to talk to Steve Geyer, who is the director of Shadowbox. We're going to switch gears a bit, but I would love to have more calls about writing, writers, and arts and culture in Central Ohio. 292-8513. Hi, Robin. Hello, Robin.
Yes. How are you doing this morning?
Go ahead.
Hey, I've been writing on and off for 40 years, many different parts of the world, but when I was in high school at Walnut Ridge back in 1980, I wrote a really brief poem called The Consequences of Progress. And if you don't mind me reciting, it's only three or four lines.
Okay, three or four lines. Go for it.
Okay. The construction, the wheel, the destruction, the waste, the deaths of others make war rate with love and justice the human race. And my psych teacher at the time was like, where did you come up with this? But I'm ex-military, and like I said, I've traveled all over the world. And I was telling the woman that answered the phone that what I find being a poet is that usually the lyrical content usually relates really strongly with my musician friends.
Rhythm.
Does that ring true?
Yeah, a bit. Yeah.
I think so, yeah. Rhythm and tone, I think, is mm-hmm. very important.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And by the way, Fred, you are absolutely correct. Well, both of you are. Poetry doesn't always have to rhyme. And like you said, that too much of a good thing's not a good thing. That's a very old Japanese proverb. And like a leaf falling down.
Robert,
even monkeys fall from trees. So
I thank you, Robert, for your call.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have on the line Steve Geyer from Shadowbox. We also want to encourage more calls about writing and poetry with Fred Anderle, 292-8513. But Steve Geyer has been kind enough to call in, and here he is.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Steve Geyer. Tell me what's going on at Shadowbox, where it is, and why we're going there.
Well, we're right on the verge of our holiday season right now. We're wrapping up an incredibly successful run of Chicago and Full Moon and Vampires and heading into Holiday Hoopla and Scrooge, which is a very big time of the year for us. It's kind of like any retail sort of operation in that we generate an awful lot of our income during this season. And I think that this year's editions of these programs are going to be the strongest yet. We've got all of our biggest and best players back together again. You know, we moved to the Brewery District about a year and a half ago, and it has been just a wonderful experience. It's everything about being in this area is great, having a real neighborhood, having our own space with a sign on the street. All of that has been extraordinarily positive. And it has allowed us to bring our companies together. The company that was down in Kentucky has now come up and joined us here in Columbus. And that means that I've got Stacey Board back together with the original Santa Babies, Julie Klein and Stephanie Scholl. And they are a treat not to be missed in our Holiday Hoopla show.
So you are producing theater pieces, you're producing musicals, you're producing plays. And having been there myself a number of times, we the audience, can't help but become part of the performance.
That's kind of the trick for us. You know, we work really hard to engage people at a level where they are not disassociated and just simply sitting there in their chair waiting for it to be over. We really want people to be actively engaged in every way that we possibly can. And the holiday shows, frankly, are extremely good at that because they are constantly referencing things that we all have in common.
And you recently finished a run of La Boheme of Puccini, a collaboration with Opera Columbus. You did it in English. You yourself directed it. And I went a couple of times and loved it. How did that work for you all? Do you have a postmortem? Because it closed recently.
It actually, to be fair, hasn't closed. It has two more Sundays.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But they're both sold out.
Oh, okay. Well.
So effectively, it's closed.
Okay.
The answer, Chris, is that working with folks from Opera Columbus was a joy. Peggy Creodai is the new, I don't know if her title is quite executive director and artistic director, but it should be.
She is now.
Oh, fabulous. She's incredible to work with.
She is.
Really bright, really energetic, and incredibly enthusiastic about opera. And willing to take chances like crazy ideas, such as having me direct. Working with the opera singers was also a marvelous experience. You know, when I got started in the work that I'm doing now, Stephanie Scholl and Stacey Board were straight out of opera school at OSU, so I had a little bit of experience working with those types of folks and an understanding of their view of the world versus the view I was more familiar with. So this was reconnecting with that, and that was important because they do indeed see the world of performance very differently from folks that have grown up with rock and roll or comedy. So it was helpful to me to have that little bit of insight. But at the end of the day, working with them, encouraging them to bring honest emotion to the roles, watching them go through the process and break down some barriers, And then mounting that show in the incredible intimate space of our bistro was just a wonderful, wonderful experience, and I'm looking forward to doing it again.
Terrific. You also do a lot of original pieces that you write or other people write that are new. Isn't that correct? You do a lot of,
yep,
like world premieres of things.
Yes, we do.
And I don't think anything is sacred unless I'm wrong.
I don't even know what that word means, Chris.
Okay, well, to each his own. Steve Geyer, thank you very much for calling in and being with us and participating. Thank you
so
pleasure.
Much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. We're talking about the arts. That was Steve Geyer, who is the executive director, artistic director of Shadowbox downtown on Front Street, which includes a wonderful restaurant, bistro, and bar, and great performances literally in your lap, which can be fun. And waiting right now is Janet Chen. Speaking of enthusiastic, smart, beautiful, etc., she is the executive director of the Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra. Hello, Janet Chen. And she's gone. Well, she's gone. Maybe she'll call back. But we've got to go back to writing. This is one of our sort of anything goes
sure,
editions of All Sides Weekend. Let's take a call from Mike. Mike's been waiting for a while from Urbana. He's a writer himself. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I'm delighted you're doing a program on writing. I'm actually a sculptor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh,
he went away.
He's gone.
Oh, okay. Well,
come back.
Now Janet's there.
Hello.
Hello, Janet. Are you there?
The phone gremlins are back with us, aren't they?
Hello.
Janet Chen, there you are.
I am here. How are you, Christopher?
Janet Chen is the executive director of the Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra. I have a question for you, Janet. Who is Vadim Gluzman?
Vadim Gluzman, he is a stunning violinist. We recently announced him as Pro Musica's new creative partner and principal guest artist. And if you have not had a chance in recent years to come hear him perform with Pro Musica, the opportunity is ripe because he is in town and will be with the orchestra Saturday and Sunday for two performances. And we are just thrilled that we're going to embark on this new collaborative journey with him. So just a stunning, stunning musician.
That's this weekend at the Southern, correct?
It is, yes. And Vadim, this whole arrangement is quite unique in the way that we will be conductorless in that traditional sense. And Vadim will actually be leading the orchestra from basically the concertmaster chair. And so he will be leading the orchestra. He will be conducting, basically running all the rehearsals, but he actually is also going to be performing as the soloist for the Mozart Violin Concerto No. 3. So he's got a lot to do.
And as usual with your programming, you mix Mozart with composers people might not yet know.
That's correct. Actually, the program also features a wonderful Italian pianist, Alessio Bax, and he and Vadim actually go way back. They've known each other for 15 years, but this is actually the first time that they're going to be collaborating together. So the program will be anchored by two Mozart concertos, the violin, as I just mentioned, to kick it off. Alessio will be doing the piano concerto to round up the evening. And again, Vadim will be leading that entire portion of the program. And there are actually two dance pieces that will be in the center. We're going to have a lovely tasting of Martinu. The cuisine. And it's for a small instrumentation. And we're also going to have Bartok's Romanian dances, which everyone enjoys. So it's really a true sampling of sort of the traditional and the contemporary and a little something for everyone.
And Pro Musica is embarking on a new music director, a sort of new identity, but they're a new chapter, certainly. And
yes,
it is a great place to hear music made by largely people who live in the community in the beautiful Southern Theater. Janet Chen, I thank you so much for calling in and sharing with us.
No, thank you. It's good to be on.
All right. Thanks, Janet. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye.
Everybody go to Pro Musica. Janet Chen is the executive director. Now, I know we're switching gears around here today, but that's what happens when guests at the last minute become unavailable or whatever. And we're going to go back to now our talk about writing for the rest of the program. And I do want our writers to call in 292-8513 if you're a writer. I don't care if you're published or not, if you're stuck. We'd like to talk about your process, how you get yourself going, where your focus needs to be, and We lost Mike, and Mike is now back. Mike, are you there?
I'm delighted that
Thank
you're
you.
Talking. Yes, I'm back here. Delighted to talk about writing as a visual artist. I think it can be a tremendous catalyst to work through interruptions and distractions to get down to what's key in visual work. I'm a sculptor primarily, but I've published about 14 books of drawings, illustrated for Doubleday, in one case, a book. But I really use it as a tool. Have kept journals for about 10 years, and I found that it's a really good process. And a key to getting to creativity is to work through what I call the junk. That is, write down what's on your mind until you really get to the point of stating what's important to do today, and try to leave the personal pronouns out. And that helps accelerate the creative thinking.
Mike, thanks so much. That's good advice. I'm just curious how your words relate to your sculpting.
Well, I think that what it can do is try to find the simplicity. Mm. I try to be efficient with what I write, try to state it in a way that is aesthetically pleasing. It's all part of an aesthetic style that is more attractive, more engaging when personal pronouns, for example, are left out, when you can get to the essential design of a piece. That's what affects my sculpture. That's what instructs my drawing and painting. And I think the writing really comes out of that same vein.
Mike, I thank you for your call and the good ideas you've shared with us. Thank you.
You know, Christopher, it's really interesting how different writers write very, very differently. Some people, I think poets in general, if you talk to them, you know, you write, Billy Collins, the poet, once said, quoting another poet, he said, you know, writing poetry is wonderful. It's a wonderful experience. But what do you do with the other 23 and a half hours in the day? That is to say, most poets I've talked to, you can write maybe about an hour and a half, and you are psychologically and even physically depleted. I mean, it sounds very strange, but you are. Fiction writers, on the other hand, you know, 4 hours a day, 5 hours a day is not uncommon. Nonfiction writers, I've talked to them on Open Line over the years, and they can, you know, it's all day. They're looking at reference sources. They're looking at diaries, first and secondary sources. They can write 12 or 14 hours a day. It's very individual. So I think if you're listening out there and you're a writer and somebody says, well, you should write every day, you know, or you should do this or you should do that, ignore all that advice and write when you feel like writing. I will say that you should write consistently. When I was doing Open Line, I did two sessions a week, 2 1-hour to 90-minute sessions a week. And if I hadn't done the two sessions a week, you know, the energy would have curdled. So I think if you're serious at all about writing fiction or nonfiction or poetry, write regularly, set yourself a schedule, and force yourself to sit down and do it. And sometimes you love to do it, and other times you want to get a cup of coffee, you want to go read the paper, but don't do it. Sit down before your computer or your tablet and write.
There's the legend that Margaret Mitchell wrote Gone with the Wind at 4 in the morning before getting the kids up for school, you know, things like that. So we have to take a break right now. We'll be back in 90 seconds. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend with Fred Anderle. Call in, you writers. Let us know your process. We'll be back in 90 seconds. Thank you.
On the next Fresh Air, criminologist David M. Kennedy discusses his approach to reducing youth homicide rates and closing street drug markets in inner cities by offering gang members and drug dealers an alternative before resorting to arrest. His approach has been used in Boston, Minneapolis, and North Carolina. He's the author of the memoir, Don't Shoot. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And stay right here with our station. At 1 o'clock, President Obama will make his first comments to the nation after winning re-election. He will deliver a statement in the East Room of the White House, and 89.7 NPR News will have live coverage. Join us today at 1. Sunshine today, a high near 60. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 44. More sunshine and a high of 70 on Saturday. Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Jewish Film Festival, beginning Sunday, November 4th, with the screening of the World War II thriller My Best Enemy at Columbus Museum of Art. The festival runs through November 18th. Tickets and more information at cjfilmfest.org or 559-6205. And support for 89.7 comes from the Sherrington Group, financial planners, investment managers, providing financial advice and client-focused solutions to help grow and preserve clients' wealth. The Sherrington Group, planning for success, managing for life at sherringtongroup.com. And All Sides Weekend continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you, Amy Jurevich. We've had an email from Brenda, Fred. She asks that you repeat the title of the poem you read earlier by Naomi
Shihab
Nye. Right.
It's called, and you can find this on the internet if you just go to Google and you put in, here's the title, The Art of Disappearing. The Art of Disappearing. You'll find it right away.
Very good. Vicky has also sent an email that she had a rough time with relationships in high school and college. Oh, those are horrible years anyway. And she wrote about 100 poems and then wrote about 100 songs during a rough time later in her life. I think she was using poetry as therapy, she writes, mm-hmm. and I think, why not?
Makes perfect sense.
You know, that's part of what you do with the hospital program, right?
Yeah, part of it indeed, yeah.
Just give us a little recap of that.
Okay, it'll be at noon at the Ross. This is, by the way, it's Hospital Poets. Anna Sutter is a professor emeritus at the College of Education and Human Ecology, sort of runs the program, and it's a collaboration also with the OSU College of Medicine Student Writers Group, the Ross Heart Hospital, and the OSU College of Medicine and the Arts Program. And it's going to be Monday, January 28th. And everybody can come. Listen, if you've not been, you don't need to be a heart patient or a staff member. It's Monday, January 28th at the Ross Heart Hospital at the Ohio State University in the auditorium, the first floor at noon, January 28th, Monday at noon. Hey, by the way, because I was going to mention, if I know people don't always have pencils and paper ready, but if you, I'm now an adjunct, or I should say an associate at the OSU Humanities Institute. If you go to Google and you put in OSU Humanities Institute, you'll go under events. You'll find all the information about this reading at the Ross Heart Hospital.
Fantastic. Yeah. That's good to know about that. Thank you, Fred. We have Martha on the line from Mount Gilead. Hello, Martha.
Hi.
You're on.
Hi. Wondered if you knew that November is National Novel Writing Month.
Wow.
Also known as NaNoWriMo. If you want to Google it, do NaNoWriMo, whatever. You can figure it out. National Novel Writing Month.
Are you writing a novel?
Well, I'm 1,465 words into one, yeah.
Good for you. Terrific.
You're supposed to write 50,000 words in the month of November.
Well, excellent.
We'll look forward to reading it. Thank you, Martha, very much.
Thank you.
National
Bye.
Novel Writing Month. I think that's terrific. And there are National Poetry Months.
Oh, surely. Every April.
A lot of that.
I want to say about novel writing, if we have a second here.
Yeah.
Walter Mosley, you know, who does the E.Z. Rollins detective character. Denzel Washington has played him in a number of movies. He has a book out called This Year You Write Your Novel. That's the title of the book, This Year You Write Your Novel. And I interviewed him on Open Line, and Walter said that if you're writing a novel, you should write every day, because he said you the characters and your intimate relationship with their psychologies will get away from you. And I said, Walter, I don't quite agree that you should write every day if you're writing a novel. But most days, I would say, because it casts a spell over you. The characters become a part mm-hmm. of you. And the characters have something to say about their lives that may be independent of what you consciously thought they would say. So I would say to our caller and anybody who's thinking about writing a novel, put aside a little time most days to write on your novel. Most days. And that's wonderful that our caller is writing a novel. That's great.
One thing that I always love hearing from novelists is that as they write something, the characters tend to take over and move in a different direction than maybe they thought. So it's really, leave yourself open to any possibility when you're...
It does happen. I wrote one novel,
which
remains in a series of notebooks. This is pre-computer days, and I can't read my handwriting, so that's the end of that one. But it was kind of a warm-up novel, and the characters did take off and do things I never expected that they would do. Yeah, they take on a life of their own.
But really speaking nice. Of books, you have a new book coming out.
Yeah, it's coming out, and my first book, Love Life, maybe some listeners will be familiar with that. It was a premium on our fundraisers when I was here. The new book is called What Counts? What Counts. It's published by XOXOX Press in Gambier. It's a small press. It's just becoming available. We haven't quite got it distributed yet. It's one place I can tell you, if you're in Delaware, you can get it at the Beehive Bookstore on Sandusky Street.
Yeah.
But it'll soon be up in other places, hopefully on Amazon and around. But it's a new book. It's called What Counts, yeah.
Book of Poetry. How long did it take you to put that together?
This book is the product of the last 4 years since I left.
WOSU.
Yeah. Okay. And it's about 120 pages long, and I found I had enough good material to actually come up with a book in 4 years.
Would you read one of your poems to us?
I sure will. This is a brief one called Autumn Moon. Don't let this moment pass unattended. Don't let the autumn moon march down the sky alone. An owl is calling from a far oak branch. She is calling you. Don't let the river journey unaccompanied. Put aside your thoughts. Let your mind ripple like the river. The sun will be waking. He will require your presence for his long, high arc in tribute to the earth. Don't let the lark take wing without your witness. She will fall if you, godlike, avert your eyes. She will never sing again if you are unwilling to listen. Don't let any single moment lose your attention. If you turn away, all creation will fail. And when you return, you will wonder why you, like the falling autumn moon, are completely alone.
Oh, my. There's a great deal of stillness in that. As I was listening to you, I was envisioning just a quiet landscape, which is a little obvious because of your opening lines. But still, the mood there, what I thought was very leveling and very beautiful.
And I think it's maybe my way of this came up, as all poems do, out of the subconscious, unconscious, maybe my way of saying, look, let's pay attention to what we're doing right now at this very moment. That's how we live if we turn away from the moment. You know, it sounds easy. It sounds like a cliche, live in the moment, but it's difficult to do. We have so many fantasies in our heads about, you know, past regrets and future plans to be right here, right now, like me with you, Christopher,
right,
doing this show and not thinking about anything else, but just being together and having a conversation with our listeners. That's not so easy to do. We have to keep bringing our attention, I think, back to it and back to it again.
But the discipline of making time for yourself to write every day, to me, it's doing something good for yourself that feeds you.
Oh, yeah,
which,
absolutely.
And then enables you to reach out to others. We have Paul from Worthington on the line. Hello, Paul.
Yes. It's great to hear Fred's voice. Having followed him for years on Open Line, it's good to hear the voice again.
Well, thank you, Paul.
As a non-writer, or a writer who basically just kind of dabbles a little bit, I just had a question on how difficult it is to move between various forms of writing, like between poetry, fiction, nonfiction. I think especially of somebody like Wendell Berry, who's probably my favorite poet and my favorite author.
Terrific.
Who does all so well. How difficult is that? You often see writers kind of specializing in one form or another.
I think it's a really good question. You know, some writers, Walter Mosley, we just mentioned him a minute ago, a wonderful novelist, not only the Easy Rollins novels, but other fine non-genre novels. He told me that he couldn't write poetry. He said he had taken poetry writing courses as a discipline, you know, for his writing, to understand his writing. But he said, I never came up with a poem that I thought was any good. It's almost as though this is not always true. You can move from genre to genre, some writers, but some writers seem to have a brain chemicalized and organized for fiction or nonfiction, and some for poetry. It's very hard for me to write fiction. The most difficult thing for me to do is write nonfiction. I'm awful at it. The words, it's just like pulling them out of my head. They don't come. So I think brains are organized differently, and it may be difficult to move from genre to genre.
Thanks, Paul, for your call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Poetry seems to me to be intensely personal to the poet, and revealing, and is it difficult to give these your poetry to the world?
Sometimes, you know, you have a poem about something that means a great deal to you, your thoughts about life and difficulties of life, or the fact that we are mortal, let's say, and your own very personal thoughts about your own mortality or your own life, and you say, wow, do I really want to? When I was putting forth my new book or getting it together, What Counts, I thought, well, is there a poem here that might be too personal for me to include? And I had a little struggle on some of the poems. And occasionally you write a poem that involves someone else and your reactions to them, not necessarily negative reactions, but personal reactions. Then you say, oh, my gosh, if somebody reads this and recognizes this person, is this going to interfere with their privacy? Is this going to bridge their privacy? There's one poem I kept out of the book for that reason. I thought people will know who this is. It's a wonderful poem, but no. Yeah.
But that dovetails real well with something I'm wondering. When I was in college, which was a while ago, it was, I guess, the tail end of what they called the confessional poets. And in fact, Anne Sexton was a professor at Boston University when I was there. And I guess she and Sylvia Plath were the really poster children of the very personal, very difficult, very purging kind of poetry, which to me didn't seem all that artistic sometimes. Are we away from that now, that kind of confessional breastbeating?
Well,
don't be calling me up because I love Anne Sexton and Sylvia
Plath.
Well,
they're wonderful.
I took
poets,
a course with Anne Sexton. I'm a big fan, so don't be yelling at me. But I'm just curious.
I think there's all kinds of poetry being written. You know, I think there's I guess if we could call it confessional poetry, something that means a great deal to one. And by the way, that's the kind of poetry sometimes that you write for yourself,
right?
And maybe you just want to put it in your own notebook, and maybe you don't necessarily want to share it with anybody. It's something for you, or something for you and your family. Sure, I think all kinds of poems are being written now. Yeah.
We have a few minutes left to go. We have one call waiting, and so we have time for a couple more. 292-8513. That's a 614 number. Or you can send an email to allsides@wosu.org or find us on Facebook. You also have a flyer with you about appearances by another member of our family, Bill Cohen.
Oh, Bill Cohen. Wonderful. Everybody knows Bill, the Ohio Public Broadcasting State House News Bureau reporter. And by the way, wonderful guy in person. Just the kindest, gentlest
Indeed
person.
Indeed he is, yeah.
He's a great guy and a fine newsman and broadcaster. Here's what we're going to do. In my role as associate at the OSU Humanities Institute, we have a series called Conversations in the Humanities. And we're going to have a conversation with Bill. It's called A Life in Broadcast Journalism. We're going to get the inside story of how public radio and television report on our Ohio government. Bill's been reporting on state government issues for nearly 40 years. Now, here's where it is. It's going to be, if you got a pencil and paper, write it down and come. This is free and open to the public. Wednesday, November 28th. It's going to be at 7 o'clock at the Jewish Community Center, 1125 College Avenue. The Jewish Community Center, you may know where that is already, 1125 College Avenue. Our event is co-sponsored with the OSU Humanities Institute and the Community Center. Bill Cohen, 7 o'clock, Wednesday, November 28th. We're going to talk about all, you know, Bill's personal feelings about covering state government and all about state government. And once again, if you don't have a pencil, if you go to Google and put in OSU Humanities Institute and go under the title Conversations in the Humanities, you'll find all the details. But it's Wednesday, November 28th, 7 o'clock. Please come. Bill, we'll love to see you. And I know you'll get an insight into Bill that maybe you never had before.
And I quite agree. Not only is he a first-class journalist, he's a lovely man. So it's
wonderful
very
person.
Yeah, that's going to be November 28th, which is not Thanksgiving Wednesday. It's the following.
It's the week after.
So
that's right.
You'll be satiated. Your family will be gone, and you need to come out to the Jewish Center at 7 o'clock on November 28th. We have a couple of minutes left. We have Richard from Westerville on the phone. There you go. Hi, Richard.
Oh, hi there. First, hi, Fred.
Hi.
I enjoy Anne, but I do miss you on the radio. Yeah, writing. I years ago had the good or bad fortune, as the case may be, to be laid off for the first time. And while I was looking for work, I said, I ought to write a book. My stepfather had been in the Second World War. I was an Air Force veteran during Vietnam. And the stories led me to writing. And the process I went through, because I had the time, thanks to the economic conditions at the time, I try to set a set schedule every day and get up at, you know, and start writing about 9 and write till lunch and then write again till 4. And I did that for probably 5 to 6 days a week for about 4 months, and then just 5 days a week, reserving the weekends for editing.
Mm-hmm.
And in 8 months, I had 1,500 pages of manuscript.
Wow.
These were a historical novel of the Second World War. And, of course, you know how hard it is to get published by a real publisher.
Oh,
but now
really,
with the magic of the internet and, you know, Google and, well, the Amazon and Kindle. So 2 years ago when I was laid off again and fortunately almost ready to retire, I said, well, okay, I'm finally going to get these things published. So I did. And split them into two books. And But
and know, what's the name of the book, and where can we find it?
You can find them on Amazon.
And what's the name of the book?
Name?
The first book is The Vaulted Sky.
The Vaulted Sky.
Uh-huh. And the sequel is The Sky Suspended.
The Sky Suspended, okay.
And they grew out of something my stepfather told me about being in North Africa when some American pilots came back in from the British Air Force in North Africa into his squadron. I said, well, fine.
There you go. Richard, we have to move on, but I do.
Well, yeah.
I appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
Fred, we have a few minutes left, and I want to ask you about a program that you're producing for this station, for your alma mater, as it were.
Yeah, the alma mater. That's right. This is a program I'm producing called Conversations About Faith. And I've always been intrigued by the idea that, in terms of faith in God, that some people have faith in God. Most people do. 92% of Americans said they believe in God. 80% of Americans say they never doubt the existence of God. 6 to 7% of Americans say they are agnostic. They can't know whether God exists, or they're atheist, and they say they are certain that God does not exist. So I've been fascinated by this. So it's going to be Sunday, December 9th, at 3 p.m., a special called Conversations About Faith on WOSU Sunday, December 9th. We're going to talk to Marcia Sinitar. She's a Christian contemplative. She wrote a book called Ordinary People as Monks and Mystics. Linda Mercadante will be with us, professor of theology at Methodist Theological Seminary, because she's been studying people who say they are spiritual but not religious. We're going to find out what that means. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to talk to Dr. Eben Alexander. He's a neurologist who recently had a near-death experience, and he is convinced that because his brain was mostly dead during this near-death experience, when he lingered between life and death for 7 days, he's convinced that his experience proves, and he used the word proof, that a heaven exists. Very controversial statement. We'll talk with Dr. Eben Alexander as well. That's Sunday, December 9th, 3 o'clock in the afternoon on WOSU.
We're grateful for that, and we look forward to it. I think there's a lot to be learned from a program like that. What else are you doing these days at the Humanities Institute?
Well, we're doing, you know, I mentioned Bill Cohen with us,
right?
Wednesday, November 28th. We're doing a monthly series called Conversations in the Humanities.
Is this the first one, or have I missed a bunch of them?
We've been going for a couple of years now, and we're...
missed a lot of them.
Smacks himself in the face.
I have to get out more.
So we'll be, you know, again, go to OSU Humanities Institute, and you'll find out the full schedule and everything we've done, and some of them are available online in audio form or in video form. And, that's what we're doing on a monthly basis.
And in our last minute and a half, let's close with Fred Anderle once again distilling his advice to budding writers.
Oh, you know, I write frequently. And Mimi Chenfeld, who you all know, wonderful writer, and she appears with Anne regularly on all sides, says, write a little something every day, even if it's only for 10 minutes. I would just amend that a little to say, write most days, but even if you can only sit down for 10 minutes and nothing but gobbledygook comes out, that 10 minutes will keep your brain flowing smoothly. That's the thing to do. Keep a regular schedule, and just like running, even when you don't feel like doing it, do it. Get to the computer, get to the pen and paper.
Just write something so that you have something to look at, because you never know what can come from yesterday's gobbledygook might be tomorrow's Pulitzer Prize-winning novel. There's no way of knowing that.
Yeah.
Fred, I thank you very much for your time, for being with us today, for being with me today. I thank Janet Chen, the executive director of ProMusica. She has wonderful concerts this weekend with Vadim Gluzman at the Southern Theater. And Steve Geyer from Shadowbox, who's looking forward to a whole holiday season of new productions. Shadowbox is a lot of fun. I urge you to check it out down on Front Street. I'm Christopher Purdy. This has been All Sides Weekend, Arts and Culture and Writing.